What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. No Thomas Drantz today. He, of course, is on the road covering the Canucks. They played a couple games over the weekend. Now they head out to California for a couple of midweek games. So no Drantz. He's traveling today. I'll be holding down the fort solo for the show. I am broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear, and orthotics, working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. As usual, with Drantz on the road, got some special guests joining me today. Brendan Batchelor will join me for a chat at 12:30. And then Landon Ferraro in studio with me for the full hour from 1 to 2. So Batch at 12:30, Landon Ferraro from 1 to 2 in studio. And as always, send your texts and questions and thoughts and comments in. I know there's an awful lot to get to. Again, 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Weigh in on the Canucks weekend. If you've got questions you want to run past me, questions you want to run past Batch or Landon, send those in as well. Again, Brendan Batchelor joining me at 12:30. Landon Ferraro in studio with me from 1 to 2 here. But, of course, before we do any of that, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 24th. And the headline is the Canucks lose not once but twice over the weekend, and they only manage two goals in those two games. And yesterday in Utah, of course, the lack of offensive push, the lack of juice, as my normal co-host Thomas Drantz would say, very, very evident. You know when you had a juice box as a kid and you finish it and you've gotten every last drop out and it kind of like crinkles and shrinks a little bit? That's what the Canucks are right now. They are that juice box that has had all of the juice extracted out of it and is now imploding in on itself. At least offensively, that's what they look like right now. And the lack of offense, it really is the story here for the Canucks. In the six games since Quinn Hughes has been out, of course, that's on either side of the Four Nations break. So a long time span, but we're talking about six games here. 11 goals for the Canucks in those six games. So under two goals per game since Quinn Hughes left the lineup. And of course, that also coincides with right after the JT Miller trade. So you're integrating new players. You lose a productive forward in JT Miller. Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup. And the offense has completely dried up and completely cratered as a result for the Canucks. And really, if you look at it, now we'll talk about Elias Pettersson. Don't worry, we will get into Elias Pettersson. Of course we will. What else would we do here on a Canucks-focused talk show? But by and large,
ice cream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
It's interesting timing, Dom. All right.
Well, you said what else, but
oh, okay, ice cream. I see. Sure. Well, we'll see. Anyways, we will get into Elias Pettersson. But by and large, when we're talking about the offense, this is much more about who's not here and the players that aren't here than the players that are. I think you could honestly look down the lineup and find some guys. Yeah, I thought he had a pretty good game. Yeah, Filippito didn't produce, but he was doing some things out there. Jake DeBrusk picks up a couple goals over the weekend, but that's never going to be enough to get it done, because the truth is right now this lineup is completely bereft of difference makers. They have no star-level players, star-level contributors in the lineup at the moment, up front or on the blue line. And they were supposed to have three of them coming into this season. You're supposed to have JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, and of course Quinn Hughes as elite star-level drivers, guys capable of flipping the game, breaking the game open at any moment. Guys who are the key parts of a really good team and hopefully a really good offensive team as they tried to take a step forward in that way coming into this season. That was a huge part of how this team was built, of course. Miller, Pettersson, Hughes. You can throw Demko in there as well. There's obviously more uncertainty. We're not talking offense when we're talking with Demko. But just in terms of scoring goals, the three elite drivers were supposed to be Miller, Pedersen, and Hughes. Well, Miller's gone, Hughes is hurt, and Pedersen is basically a ghost out there, a shell of himself, a shadow of his former self for 12 months now. And again, we will talk more Elias Pedersen in just a second here. So you had three guys who were supposed to be your star offensive drivers, the guys who could make the difference on any given night. And you probably were hoping coming into the season that, hey, there'd be a bunch of games with those three guys on your team where you'd have the three best skaters in the game. If we'd been talking about a Utah versus Vancouver game coming into this season, you'd probably look at it and say, yeah, I think the Canucks have the three best skaters in that game in Pedersen, Miller, and Hughes. And again, with Pedersen and Miller, with Miller and Hughes, one traded, one hurt, and Pedersen nowhere near that standard. Instead, it was Utah who had the best skaters on the ice. And really, it really stands out looking at it to me with Pedersen as a shadow of himself and no Hughes and no Miller. You look at just the group of forwards, it has almost like an expansion team feel to it. Who's the most dangerous line over the games this weekend? Let's say probably the Hedel, O'Connor, Besser group. I know DeBrusque had a couple of goals, power play goal last night. That's nice. Pedersen, a little bit more happening with him on the ice, although not towards the end of the game. But really, I think you'd say Hedel, O'Connor, Besser were their best line. That's an expansion-esque first line. And I'm not talking about the Vegas Golden Knights expansion team that ends up going to the Stanley Cup Finals, but look at like the Seattle Kraken in their first year. Yeah, you got Jordan Eberle, you got Jaden Schwartz, you got some nice players, but you don't have the true star-level guys that can kind of tie it all together. And that's where the Canucks find themselves right now. I like Filip Hedel as a player. I like Brock Besser as a player. I like Jake DeBrusque as a player. It's not that these guys are useless, that these guys can't contribute to winning teams, but you need the star guys, the superstar guys, to round it all together. And that's what the Canucks are missing. The Canucks this year, even really, they don't have a single forward in the top 100 league-wide in points per 60 at 5-on-5. Not a single guy in the top 100 at just how often do you score at even strength? Pretty important number, pretty basic number here. The Canucks don't have a single forward in the top 100 for that stat around the NHL. That, to me, means they don't have a single forward performing at a solid first-line level at even strength. Forget a superstar level, which is what they really need to be Stanley Cup contenders. They don't have a single guy this year at forward who's performed at a legit first line level at 5-on-5. And that's why I say it kind of feels like an expansion group of forwards right now with Pedersen playing the way that he is. A bunch of guys you can look at and say, okay, yeah, I can see how they would fit into a better team if they were slotted a little further down the lineup, but you're missing that top layer of talent to really shoulder the load, that can carry the mail, that can get things done, that can create chances for other players. Again, I don't necessarily blame guys like Jake DeBrusque and Brock Besser. They're complementary players, but they don't have anyone to compliment right now. Like, the definition of a complementary player is Brock Besser. We've seen him play his best when JT Miller is at his best. That's not a slight of Brock Besser. He's a really, really good complementary player. When he has a star-level player to act as a sidekick to bounce off of, he's really, really good. There's nothing wrong with that. You need really good complementary players, but this is what it looks like when you have a bunch of complementary guys and no drivers, no one to set them up, no one to be the Batman to their Robins. This is what you end up getting. You end up getting a team that really struggles to generate shots, that really struggles to generate scoring chances, that can go a stretch and have 11 goals in six games and look extremely ineffective offensively. So that's the issue right now. It's just, again, and it's magnified with Quinn Hughes out of the lineup. But we all know it goes beyond that. Even with Quinn Hughes doing superhuman things, this team lacks high-end talent now with Elias Pedersen playing the way he is. And the question of how are the Canucks going to fill that void? How are they going to address that lack? Can they address that lack while Quinn Hughes is still here and still under contract? That's going to be the major question around this team going forward. And I don't mean, between now and the deadline. We'll get to deadline stuff in a second here. But I mean going into next season, going into the years beyond that. It looked like they had their two. They thought they certainly did. They certainly thought they had their two elite drivers at the top of the lineup in JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Now one's gone, and who knows with the other. And that brings us to Elias Pettersson. And through two periods last night, probably a lot of people saying, yeah, that's actually one of his better games. Now, I think that illustrates just how far the bar has dropped for Elias Pettersson. That game to me last night, again, through two periods, and we'll talk about the ending of the game and talk its comments in a second. That game to me is the classic one where if Elias Pettersson turned in that performance in the middle of his 100-point season, no one would say, oh, I'm really worried about Pettersson. That was a really bad game. It would just be completely anonymous. And the fact that now when he has a kind of relatively anonymous but not disastrous performance, it gets held up as, wow, he's making progress. To me, that kind of tells you everything you need to know about how Pettersson's played and what his standard, what his level is right now. And then, of course, you see late in the game, 6-on-5, they're pressing for the tying goal. He's not making plays. He's not shooting. He doesn't look confident out there. And that's what Rick Tocchet says after the game to Ian McIntyre, our colleague. Great piece up right now at sportsnet.ca that you can read. He's double clutching. I just want to see him rip pucks, play with some confidence. And then, of course, IMac, after the cameras are off, not doing it in front of the cameras, but just directly to Elias Pettersson, person to person. This is the quote from IMac's article. When we asked Pettersson whether confidence is a factor when struggling to score, the alternate captain said, it's more annoying dealing with the media. That's from Ian McIntyre. And I mean, what else do I really need to say? I think you've all seen the reaction on social media, on our station earlier today. I know Drance weighed in on it with Halford and Brough. Halford and Brough weighed in on it. That's just an embarrassing response. You're the highest paid player on the team. You're supposed to be the superstar number one center on the team. Quinn Hughes is out. As IMac says, you're an alternate captain. You're part of you're the only member of the preseason leadership group who's healthy and playing right now. Miller's gone. Hughes is hurt. Demko is hurt. Elias Pettersson is the senior, healthy and active leader on this team at the moment. And we all know he's not performing anywhere near what he's capable of. It's a very basic question. This isn't gotcha or anything like that, or the media haranguing and harassing Elias Pettersson. This is just the most basic level of what's up? What's going on? That's it. That's the question. Can he just tell us what he thinks is going on? That's been one of the most baffling things about this whole saga now, going back 12 months. The lack of compelling explanation from any official source, whether it's Pettersson himself, the team, we hear kind of both parties, you know, talk around it. Well, preparation, knee, tendonitis, he didn't work hard enough. None of it comes close to being a compelling, satisfying explanation for just the complete absence of effectiveness for Elias Pettersson over 12 months. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions. There's going to be a lot of curiosity about what the heck is going on. And it's very, very odd to me and disappointing, frankly, that Elias Pettersson just doesn't have any interest in addressing it. I guess I don't know if he just doesn't think it's any of the fans' business. It's no one else's business, so he doesn't want to say. I disagree. I do think the fans have absolutely every right to know what he thinks is happening. And I know, you know, you see this idea, well, you know, he's injured, but he can't admit it. He can't admit it. He can't sit out because the Canucks would be mad at him. They'd be mad. And yeah, were they disappointed that he was the only guy after the playoffs last year who kind of pointed to his tendonitis, pointed to an injury as the reason for his performance? I think they were. Because a bunch of other guys were very, very hurt, probably more hurt than him, and they performed a lot better than him. But I really have a problem with this idea that Pettersson is this, like, unwitting victim in all of this, that the Canucks are being so mean to him by refusing to set him out, refusing to acknowledge that he has an injury. Elias Pettersson is represented by JP Barry and Pat Brisson. Those are the two most powerful agents in hockey. Elias Pettersson is one of the highest paid players in the league. This idea that he has no power, that, oh, yeah, he's injured and he should sit out, but, you know, those dang mean old Jim Rutherford is just keeping him in the lineup. Pat Brisson and JP Barry are going to let that fly? They're fine with that too. Again, these are the two most powerful agents in the game. You don't think agents have sway in these situations? You don't think agents can advocate for their players and their health? You don't think both sides would be extremely motivated to find a solution? That if it really was strictly a physical thing for Elias Pettersson, that there wouldn't be some conversation, some chance to find a solution between the agents and the team? I don't get it. Elias Pettersson, he's not a bystander in this. He has a voice. He has agency. He's got two very, very powerful people in the world of hockey in his corner whose job it is to advocate for him. So if he's injured and he can't perform, they need to do their job and they need to advocate for him and get him out of the lineup. And if he's in the lineup, then the questions about why he is performing the way that he is are absolutely 100% fair. And his refusal to address it in any meaningful way is absolutely baffling. That's it. I don't know what else to say. It's the most basic question imaginable. He has refused to answer it over and over and over. I guess he thinks it's annoying being asked about what, like three times in the last 12 months? That's tough. I guess that's tough. And I don't know, the longer this goes on, the more untenable this feels. Because with this version of Elias Pettersson, you're never going to be close to a contender. And how long can you wait? How long can you wait to see if he gets that magic back? And I have to wonder at this point, you know, how much bad blood is building up? Would everyone be better with a fresh start somewhere else? We'll see. We've got obviously, 10 days before the deadline here. Then we all know the new no-move clause kicks in on July 1st, but it's starting to have that kind of untenable sense to it with Elias Pettersson and the Vancouver Canucks. We'll move on to the broadsheet here. Now, nothing really specific to report, but I just want to take this chance in the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard to look ahead a little bit to the deadline and also weigh in on what their plans might be, what their plan should be. Canucks only play four more times before the deadline. It's only four more games. And yeah, you know, you got the Ducks a couple times in there. You got the Kraken. You have the Kings on Wednesday. But of course, Durant reported last week on the show and in The Athletic that this stretch of games between the Four Nations and the trade deadline, the performance of the team would play a big role in shaping their plans. Well, they come out of the gate with two losses in regulation, one to a team chasing them in a playoff spot, one to a potential first-round opponent in the Vegas Golden Knights, and they score two goals doing it. And they look extremely undangerous for most of those games, for most of those 120 minutes. So if you're looking for these games as, okay, hey, team, tell us, can we use zone rentals? Do we have to sell off? Should we be buying? If you're looking to this stretch of games for an answer to direct your plans, direct your strategy, well, I think you're getting a pretty clear answer to start. Still four more games. It was only two of the six. But unless there is a stunning, stunning turnaround, and really, I don't even mean that, unless there's a stunning turnaround in the next four games. There's no way the next four games, three of which are against the Ducks and the Kraken, should dramatically change what you want to do ahead of the deadline. I don't see, with the way this team has performed, with the questions around Demko and Pettersson and Hughes, I don't see how you can keep Brock Besser as your own rental. I think that has to be out the door. That option has to be off the table. And even what Drance and I have talked a lot about, which is, okay, you trade Besser, get those assets in, and then maybe you flip them for the really cheap rental on the wing to punch up your offense a little bit, you know, still give you a fighter's chance down the stretch and maybe a glimmer of hope in the playoffs. I'm not even sure if that makes sense at this point. Do you really want to trade a second round pick for Jason Zucker? I don't know how enticing that is. But I think what's become very clear, and maybe they see a deal to be made with Brock Besser still and an extension to keep him here, it has to be extend or trade with Brock Besser. And I think the same goes for Derek Forbort, Noah Juulsen, the extra defensive depth. Those seem like no-brainers as well to me. Pew Suter's a more interesting one because I don't know how much value he has on the trade market as kind of undersized, not super high-scoring center. And you know how much we love Pew Suter on this show. So Pew Suter, if you're going to keep one, I guess that's the one that makes the most sense. And can you still try to work out an extension with him after the deadline? Yeah. But Besser, it's sign or it's trade. And you've got 10 days until the end of next week to make that decision. But right now, the own rental option is off the table, or should be off the table, for the Vancouver Canucks. Lineup notes, no practice today. The team plays LA on Wednesday. It will be interesting to see what happens with the lineup. Of course, Archdeep Baines draws in for Neil Zaman yesterday. Didn't play all that much. Wasn't particularly effective. Victor Mancini debuts, makes his Canucks debut, and I thought he handled himself pretty well. And I know Drance noted in his piece at The Athletic, it was sheltered usage for Mancini, which makes sense, making your debut, and it's still, I think, his 16th career NHL game for a new club. But I thought he handled himself pretty well. And so they've got options now. That was Carson Soucy out of the lineup, giving him a little bit of a rest. You know, Derek Forbort, I think, is a very good bet to be moved at this point. And part of that reason why I would have no hesitation about moving a guy like Forbort, moving a guy like Noah Juulsen, is, well, all of a sudden you have more credible defensive depth. You have Mancini in. Elias Pettersson is giving you really solid minutes. I thought he was pretty impressive, again, over the weekend for a young defenseman. You've got real credible options that you can use on the blue line in a way you didn't before. So, yeah, all right. That makes guys like Forbort and Juulsen a lot more expendable. The other note, I think, that's really important from a lineup decision in the near term here, from a lineup decision standpoint in the near term, is the fact that Archer Schielhaus was fantastic. And didn't have a chance to mention that talking about the game. I wanted to focus on the offensive struggles. But that's a really, really big performance for Archer Schielhaus. He struggled so much at the beginning of the year. And this was coming from a player who was kind of expected to be the clear-cut backup coming into the season after his great playoff performance. Then Lankinen comes in, and it's just no contest early in the season. They roll with Lankinen. Lankinen gets a big money extension while Schielhaus is still in the AHL. For him to come up and have that type of performance, yes, in a losing effort, but look really, really solid, that's got to do wonders for his confidence. Certainly, then, it makes it a lot easier for the Canucks to manage their goaltending situation before Thatcher Demko is back, right? You don't have to worry like, oh man, do we have to give Lankinen this back-to-back in LA and Anaheim? You can roll Archer Schielhaus out there with really no fear at this point against Anaheim later in the week on the second half of a back-to-back. And just important for Archer Schielhaus, I think, reestablishing himself as a credible NHL option, which he did not look like early in the season. So big deal for the lineup decisions for the Canucks. Big deal for Archer Schielhaus as well. He was fantastic last night in Utah. Playoff and standings update. Canucks lose the two games on the weekend in regulation. Calgary beat San Jose last night. That means the Canucks and the Flames back to basically a dead heat for the last playoff spot in the Western Conference. Canucks with 63 points in 57 games. Calgary 62 in 56. And yeah, that is essentially a dead heat in terms of points percentage. Utah, 4 points back of the Canucks at 59 points, but they do have the Canucks have the one game in hand. So that was a big win for Utah, but it's not, they're not all of a sudden necessarily breathing down the Canucks' neck either as a result of that four point swing last night. And per Dom Lucision's model, remember the Canucks' playoff chances coming out of the Four Nations break were all the way up at 88% in the model. They slip, of course, fairly dramatically slip over the weekend, but only down to 77%. So still, the model looks at them as the heavy favorites to outlast the likes of Calgary and Utah in the Western Conference and sneak in, let's put it that way, to the playoffs in the second wild card spot. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We will take a break. I'll take a chance to have a perusal through the inbox. Check out your comments after the first segment. Get into some of those later on in the show. But up next, it is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks, joining me here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.